With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, welcome to the program.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I'm doing well. I stayed up not very late last night. I didn't stay up all night watching. Matter of fact, election night, I like it to be early and see what's happening, but like we argued yesterday, long term, philosophically speaking, not much changes. But it's still interesting. There were some things going on, and there will be a lot of political talk about the results. They were, in some places, rather dramatic. You know, it's interesting to see. I think the most interesting thing is that the House definitely switched hands, a big victory for Democrats. But there's a big victory in the Senate, you know, for the Republicans, and there may be some logical explanations for this. But, you know, the political thing that I've been thinking about is that I have anticipated that built into the system are all the mistakes of low interest rates and QEs and spending and debt, and there has to be a correction, and the correction has already shown signs that it has started. But in politics, it's who gets blamed. Generally speaking, the Fed doesn't get blamed, even though I would like to. Deficits aren't blamed because everybody likes the deficit. But it's a political thing. You know, who remembers Hoover for anything other than he caused the depression, he's associated with it. So if we get bad times, which we will, and it could start almost any time, it's bound to start within in the next two years, even if it starts in the next 1 month, it's going to be related to this election that people could argue, well, you rejected Trump, he had helped make the economy good, and it may be a benefit to Trump long term. Because let's say we're right about a major crisis coming, economically speaking, and maybe even foreign policy-wise with trade and this sort of thing. So if that is the case, Trump, he's pretty good at flipping things off and not taking responsibility or blame. It wasn't my fault. I had the economy roaring, and then the Democrats came in, and the Republicans didn't do a very good job in defending their seats in the House. And therefore, it may be totally neutralized that Trump may be able to escape the blame that generally, that the president ends up with. Even though I'm not arguing that we should be able to blame the president, because it's much more significant than that. These mistakes have been built in for the past 10 years, you know, the QEs and the recoveries and all the spending and the debt and this sort of thing. But who knows? It may turn out in a year from now, people will say it was a blessing in disguise. Trump escaped a lot of problems, because right now the blame will at least have to be shared with the Democrats.
Yeah, and you know, the first they were fantasizing about a blue tsunami, then a blue wave, and then it turned out to be actually a blue trickle, a blue ripple. You know, not much. They're certainly not the blue wave that they thought. So, you know, there was a 60-some seat shift in the midterms under Obama, I think the first Obama, 60-some seat shift toward Republicans. So midterms, the president of the party, the president's party loses. I think there's about 20-some seat shift here in the first midterm. So certainly not the tsunami the Democrats were hoping for. A few interesting takeaways, though. Places where Trump campaigned, the candidates did pretty well. Talk about Florida, Texas Senate race. And also, this is also interesting, we talked about before the show, places where the Bush Republicans were very anti-Trump, these guys lost. There was quite an interesting. In fact, I think we have a tweet from the president. Let us know how he feels about it. Upbeat. Those that worked with me in this incredible midterm election, embracing certain policies and principles, did very well. Those that did not, say goodbye. Yesterday was such a very big win, and all under the pressure of a nasty and hostile media. He doesn't sound too sad, Dr. Paul.
No, I don't think he's going to be crying about it. And he will feel, maybe a little better off if what I say is true, that he's not going to get blamed for the problems that are coming. But I still think that like we talked yesterday, the election really doesn't change much. Short term, it does. I mean, I'm impressed with the stock market, way up today. But it's crazy thinking that they think that things are going to get bad because the Democrats are in a little bit of gridlock, and the economy will get weak. And because the economy is weak, the Fed can't raise interest rates anymore. Huh. And if the Fed can't raise interest rates, then that's good for the stock market, and the stocks go up. It has nothing to do with dealing with the underlying problems of the discrepancy between income of the middle class and the poor and the very wealthy in Wall Street. Those problems still exist. But today, the result was the dollar's value went up and went down because they think the interest rates will not go up because they'll have to compensate for this. But tomorrow, they may think differently. Matter of fact, the way those markets are doing right now, maybe by the end of the day, they may be different. But for right now, it's interpreted, it was good. It was good for the markets, and the stock market is skyrocketing right now.
That sounds kind of like a house of cards, doesn't it? They're desperate for those interest rates to stay at zero, essentially at zero. So what happens if there is a downturn?
Yeah, with it at zero? They have no place to go. And that's about all they do. They don't ask a question of, why are we rigging rates? You know, it's supposed to be wage and price controls aren't good, but they put up with wage and price controls all the time when they talk about minimum wages and union wages, all these kind of things. And then they have to rig the price of the metals. They rig prices of gold to distort the information. And then also the most important rigging, damaging, is the rigging of the price of money, which is the interest rates. So that's a problem that they're not dealing with there, and that's going to be dealt with some other day, maybe when we have reforms. Maybe we'll get them out of the business of monopolizing monetary control.
Yeah. A couple of other interesting takeaways that I noticed in the media. One was the so-called Kavanaugh effect, and it's been reported that the Democrats who oppose Kavanaugh in swing Senate seats were all defeated. That's pretty interesting, kind of a backlash there. The other thing, and this was from an interesting analysis in the UK Spectator today, this is an interesting quote I think it's worth thinking about. Nancy Pelosi, who's expected to take back over as Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi embodies the time warp that the American left finds itself in. They have not found their anti-Trump. Now, it's interesting, you think about her, you think about Hillary being a pre-front runner for 2020. I think time warp is an interesting way to describe it.
Yeah, and the day after an election like this, it looks like it's all rosy. But what's going to happen, Republicans had pretty strong control of the House, but they had a Freedom Caucus. They had to be challenged all the time, and there was a fight between the Bush Republicans. Bush Republicans haven't done so well, but I think there very well could be some pretty tough fights in the Democratic Party, and the Black Caucus is going to feel their oats. They're going to demand probably a lot, mm-hmm. And they've even talked about, well, maybe it's time we have a Black Speaker. Yeah. Can you imagine that coming up in the conflict with Nancy Pelosi? She's earned it. She's worked hard. She's responsible for that. And to introduce somebody else, now that would be a big squabble. But one thing that might happen that Trump has tried to get past, and he hasn't been able to, and I'm not going to talk about the wall, because I don't think they're all of a sudden going to get money for the wall, but they might get the money for the infrastructure, yeah, which can be really big, a lot of money, a political boondoggle, and he might be able to go and negotiate with Democrats and say, hey, look, he wasn't able to get that done in his first 2 years, but he just might be able to get that, and the Democrats love that, and that means that the problems what we talk about just that much worse. It's just they're not going to tax everybody and pay for it. They're going to print money, and this will be just part of a bigger problem. But I think they'll probably get infrastructure money going here.
And this is probably the real bad news of the election. Everyone's a gridlock. The Democrats hold the House. Senate is held by Republicans with a slightly wider margin. Gridlock's coming. But the real danger, I think, is compromise. Because as you always say, they're going to, the way that they compromise is, okay, you can have your infrastructure money. We got our military industrial complex money. Spend a lot more and we're all happy.
Yeah, and we talked about that yesterday, that they won't talk about it, and they didn't talk about it, and that's not what the vote was about. And even though symbolically it's supposed to be a trade-off, but, you know, Democrats are warmongers too. And Republicans are social welfarists also.
Yeah.
So they play this game for their base, but the war spending is going to continue. You know, the military industrial complex didn't lose a vote over this. So this is going to be a tremendous, I think, acceleration. Not that they weren't spending enough already. I mean, Trump has done a pretty good job on spending us into prosperity, over $1 trillion of debt this year. So this is that is going to get worse under these conditions, because if Trump could get the Republican Congress not to fight him on spending, he won't have as much trouble with the Democrats, because they philosophically don't even pretend that deficits matter.
Yeah, you know, after his tremendous victory getting Trump elected, Putin apparently has lost the magic, because he's no longer able to manipulate the dials of the American electoral system. The person that has been referred to many times as Putin's favorite congressman, Dana Rohrabacher from Redondo Beach, California, he lost his race. It was a close race. Putin's favorite congressman lost his race. How could Putin not do a little bit of turning of the dials to help his favorite congressman?
Boy, they didn't interfere enough. Now, we wouldn't let that happen to the places where we interfere. We're pretty good at accomplishing our coups and taking over. But I think that the American people sort of sympathetic to gridlock. I don't know how openly are about it, but I think they like balance. They don't like to see if Trump's in charge and he's running the show and he's dictating and overstepping his bounds and too executive. Some people might say, well, you know, it's time we, you know, curtail them, and that's when split government is good. So, yes, I think that I think if the Republicans would have held hold of the House and gained some seats like they have in the Senate, I think the country would have been worse off, the truth is, because I think that there'd be less resistance. Now they're going to have to talk and find out where they're going to spend the money, not if they're going to spend the money. But I sure wish they'd reassess the foreign policy, which they won't address, because, you know, the one thing is the Republicans and the Democrats are solidly behind the triad, the three countries that are destined to try to destroy Iran, and that's Israel, United States, and Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
And you know, I double-checked the dates on this, on how long this Sunni Shia thing was going on. 1,400 years.
Yeah, well, we'll solve it.
And we're going to go broke trying to solve this problem. So it's... But that wasn't even being discussed, and it's not going to be discussed, and there's no debate over it. They're going to continue to do it, you know, that they're going to continue to support these wars over there.
What's amazing, talk about foreign policy, what really hasn't been discussed, my previous joke aside, is what's been completely missing from the reporting is Russian interference. There's big claims. They're trying to interfere in the midterms. They're trying to interfere. I did a brief look at all the mainstream media. There's really nothing there. In fact, Craig Limburg, he's a fellow you remember back in November of 2016 in the Washington Post, sort of started a lot of this Russiagate nonsense with a ridiculous article he published based on this study by Prop or Not that found, that discovered all of these thousands or 200 websites that were Russian influence. One of them is, of course, RPI, the Drudge Report, Zero Hedge, Lou Rockwell. So this was the thing that he launched. He himself, Limburg, had a piece yesterday, and here's what he said. Forget the Russians. On this election day, it's Americans peddling disinformation and hate speech. So it's just, it was a complete scam.
Yeah, it was. And they're not going to have more Russiagate investigations, because there's more to be found about Hillary than on Trump.
Yeah.
So they're not going to do that. And I think Trump, I think his ace in some of this stuff, I cannot believe that he doesn't have some ammunition that he's holding back if they get, you know, pestering and too many investigations, because I think he has deliberately not called attention to all this because there's he'd like to avoid some investigation on his personal things like that. Yeah. But if they get too nasty, I think he has some other thing. Which, once again, if it's part of gridlock, that's okay. But if it's just adding more to spending and bigger government and all, you know, that's when it's very bad. But right now, I think that they didn't eliminate gridlock. I think they've added some gridlock there. They're going to slow things down a little bit. But once again, who runs the show? Is the Congress very important? Well, we've been arguing, well, you know, they're pretty secondary, yeah. You know, to it. You know, like the war issue I was talking about. They don't have to talk about it because they know where we stand on the military-industrial complex. And the war in Yemen is not going to end. We're not going to walk away. I mean, haven't even talked about it in a month, so that's going to continue. And this to me is a shame that they won't at least address it. But that means the people weren't concerned. The Republicans and the Democrats in the House and the Senate really didn't want to bring it up. And in the old days, that might have been an issue, but right now it's not an issue, and that's why the wars are going to continue, the spendings are going to continue. There will be some agreements on infrastructure spending, and they're not going to be probably cutting any more taxes. And I think that's probably one of the things that will be different. The regulations may not be disappearing like or reduced, at least under Trump. But they think if they can just leave it alone, it'll be okay, which I hope is the case. But I think that the momentum is so great on these issues that they don't have control except for the people who behind the scenes are pulling the strings and who control, you know, the monetary system, the Federal Reserve system, that they look out for Wall Street. That is what it's designed to. And what I said in my opening statement was what they did was it was an interpretation that's going to help the stock market. And lo and behold, it did. And Republicans and Democrats, you know, aren't going to change it because they're not going to change the economic system to really help the middle class and to help, you know, sort out this problem. Why is there so much dissent between the rich and the poor? And there's a very specific reason for it. But that, I think, the real reason isn't being discussed. And obviously, I believe it's due to government spending and the Federal Reserve. So that's not on the table. So that's why I think that dissension is going to continue. And there's going to, unless we wake up on our side and we do a better job, there's going to be probably more democratic socialists that are going to come to our rescue and solve our problems. So I think there's some statistics there that don't bode well because 20, 30, 40 years ago, people labeled themselves, oh, I'm a socialist. I mean, they'd have been laughed at, but now they're getting elected.
That's true. Now, I share your view about the Russiagate investigation. I know Adam Schiff, who was the biggest proprietor of this Russiagate scam, he was, so over the top it was laughable. He was a parody. Well, he's now going to be the chair of the House Intelligence Committee. But I just wonder because you know Pelosi said no impeachment, forget it. That's off the table. I think someone may come to Schiff. He may be right now excited and fantasizing about really an investigation. I think someone might come to him and say, hey, cool it. You know, we got other things to do now. You know, this is done. But I'll just close by reporting a couple of pretty good news stories. Not perfect, but we got to end on a high note. So three out of the four state initiatives on marijuana passed. It was only in North Dakota, which was a pretty broad measure. It was to legalize recreational marijuana and expunge the records of those who had previously been arrested for it. That did not succeed. But Michigan passed a recreational marijuana bill. Both Missouri and Utah voted for to set up a medical marijuana program to study medical marijuana. So there are some caveats because a lot of states look at this legalization as a real potential cash cow for taxes. So it's not necessarily pure 100% pro-freedom. However, it is a move in the right direction. And as RPI's Adam Dick has been monitoring for years, this is a steady progress toward the decriminalization of marijuana. The states are really taking the role in getting rid of this sort of federal prohibition on marijuana. So, Dr. Baugh, that's pretty good news.
Yeah, it is. And I'd like to add to that on what I want to suggest that our president could do, because most people are predicting that Jeff Sessions is leaving. Now, that would be a help to this country. He is not a civil libertarian, and he has not been helpful to the president. I don't think the president is proud of him. So let's say Jeff Sessions loses, and we get a new substitute for him. Maybe somebody concerned about civil liberties. But my suggestion to the president would be to pardon everybody in this country that's arrested under federal law and has not committed a violent act for the use of marijuana. And believe me, it was the Congress that passed the law after you've been arrested and charged and convicted three times, you had to get a life sentence. I can't believe that we're doing that, but there are a lot in the prisons that did not commit violent acts, and they're more patients than they are criminals because they are addicted to drugs. We treat alcoholics a lot better than we treat drug addicts, but this is a shame, and there's no reason why the president shouldn't consider this. But first step, get rid of Jeff Sessions and get a good substitute in there for him. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.